This is the Mason Vera Payne Show, your go-to lifestyle program, covering everything from technology and gaming to movies, TV shows, and pop culture to the supernatural and beyond. Brought to you by WGNRadio.com with your host, the unabridged millennial, Mason Vera Payne.
Mason Payne here live from the MVP Studios in Chicago, and thank you for tuning in. Now, Nintendo is a company that is known for Mario, Luigi, Yoshi, and other iconic characters, and everyone has at some point played a game or owned a system. For years, Nintendo has provided various entertainment for the masses, and joining me to speak about the history of Nintendo and what we can expect from them in the future is co-founder of the National Video Game Museum, Sean Kelly. Thanks for joining me, Sean.
Yeah, you're welcome. Glad to be here again.
The last time we spoke, we talked about Sega. This time around, I'm really excited to talk about Nintendo. These guys have been around for a long time, but how long have they been incorporated for?
Nintendo's been around for over 100 years, believe it or not. They were founded in 1889.
1889?
Hard to believe, right?
Yeah. What did they do when they started out? Because I imagine it wasn't video games.
No, you know, they used to make playing cards, and they did that for a really long time. They just regular old, you know, decks of playing cards. They did that for about 50-60 years. They ventured into a bunch of different businesses after they were doing playing cards. They were doing playing cards for a really long time, like I said, until about the 1950s, when I think that they were starting to see the writing on the wall that maybe playing cards wasn't going to be their future forever and ever. And so they started to venture into a bunch of other businesses. They owned a taxi company for a while. They made food. They made like canned rice and things like that. They even had a chain of what you call love motels for a while. You know, it's funny because Nintendo is still really, I don't want to say the same company, but they've always kind of had their eyes open or their feelers out for, you know, where they could go to make more money or better money or make their company better. And they started out, like I said, with a really wide variety of different businesses before they switched to video games.
So when did they start making video games?
Well, they first started to do toys, and the toys kind of led them to video games. So, you know, a couple of things that we have in the museum was an early Nintendo toy called the Ultra Hand, which is like the scissors-operated, like, levers and this really long extension hand, and you can pick up things with it. And then we also have what they call the Ultra Machine, and it was a baseball pitching machine. So you push, you step on something with your foot, and it pops up a plastic baseball for a little kid to hit with a plastic bat. They started video games in 1977, and that was with what they called the color TV game, which really was just like a clone of the popular Pong games that were here in the U.S. for a few years at that point.
When did they start becoming popular? Because, you know, for a long time, even now, my father, whenever I talk about video games, he's like, oh, you still play with your Nintendo? And I'm like, no, Dad, there's like a bunch of things.
Yeah, right. The people, it's kind of like Kleenex is the word for tissue.
Yeah.
So a lot of people, they do the same thing with Nintendo for video games. But the Pong games that they made were actually pretty popular. They sold millions of them in Japan. And from there, they saw what happened to the video game market in the 70s and 80s here and how crazy it went. And they also saw how bad it got in 1984 when the video game market here crashed. They developed a system in Japan called the Family Computer System, or the Famicom, and they were real conscious of, you know, what caused the video game market to crash here in the U.S. Computers were one of them. So Nintendo, when they developed the Famicom, they were very careful to make sure that this system wasn't going to be marketed as just a video game system. It was a family computer system. So right out of the box, you know, you had this little red console, but they also sold like a keyboard for it. They sold a disk drive, everything that you needed to turn the system into a computer. And in Japan, the Famicom did really well. What didn't do really well for them in Japan was the computer add-on stuff. They realized, you know, people don't really want to turn their video game systems into a computer. So let's just, when they came to the U.S., you know, the early press materials for the Nintendo Entertainment System here in the U.S. all showed keyboards and all this crap that they were going to release here in the U.S. with the NES, but it never came out. They saw, you know, the video game system did really well in Japan. The computer stuff wasn't really that necessary. So when it came to the U.S., it was the Nintendo Entertainment System, but they didn't release any of the computer stuff here in the U.S. They deemed it wasn't necessary, and they were right.
You know, one of the things that I've read that I don't know if it's true, and I'm hoping that you can tell me if it is or not, but that Nintendo actually, when they were marketing the NES in the U.S., that they're the ones who actually started saying, hey, we're going to market this specifically to boys. And that's how we kind of have like video games became a boys toy. Is that true?
I don't know that that's true. It's kind of a rumor. You know, I don't think they targeted boys, but they also realized that at the time that, you know, all they had was, you know, past data to work on. And if you look back at the Atari era, most of the players were boys. I don't think they specifically targeted boys, but they knew what their audience was. So it was mostly boys. I think pretty early on in the Nintendo's lifespan that not only Nintendo itself, but a lot of the third-party companies saw, hey, there's a whole lot of girls out there that might want to play too. So let's make games that are targeted specifically towards them. What they didn't understand is that girls don't have to play games based on Barbie or Smurfs. Or girls are just as good at playing Mario and Kirby and Zelda and everything else, just like the boys are. And I think that they quickly realized that it wasn't necessary to look at the market as, you know, one gender or another. That all the games that they make are, I mean, granted, maybe girls don't want to play Call of Duty as much as boys do, but, you know, anything that is kind of non-gender specific, girls are up to play it just as much as guys are. So I don't think there was ever a specific intention to market to just the boys.
Why was it that they called the for us it's the NES, but in Japan it's called Famicom, but it's the same system, right?
It's the same system. It just Nintendo has done that throughout much of its history. The last couple of generations, there really wasn't a difference in the game system's names. But I don't know, Nintendo is a Japanese company. I think they kind of felt like they needed to differentiate themselves in Japan. But it's exactly the same system. They did, in fact, some of the early Nintendo games came, like, there's actually a physical difference in the design of the Famicom. The cartridges are a little bit smaller than they are for the Nintendo NES. And some of the early cartridges for the NES, because they couldn't manufacture them fast enough, they had a little adapter inside of the cartridge that was actually a Famicom cartridge plugged into a little adapter, and then it plugged into the American NES. But they play the exact same games for the most part. It's just a physical difference in the cartridge. But the difference in the name, I think, was just to differentiate the Japanese version from the American version. And they don't do it anymore.
You know, when it comes to mascots, everybody knows Nintendo's. It's Mario, Kirby, Donkey Kong, you know, Zelda, Link, all of these characters. Everybody knows them. How come they're so successful and, you know, everybody else kind of fell off the wagon with their mascots?
Well, that's the thing about Nintendo is very, very careful with those characters, Mario and, like you say, Donkey Kong and Zelda. And, you know, if you look at the games that were released with those characters, there are almost zero bad games with any of those characters on them. And that's because Nintendo is very, very careful about those characters. They know that, you know, that's where their money is. You know, what sets Nintendo apart from Sony and Microsoft and Sega and whoever else are those characters. So, and they know that, you know, they don't want to mess with those characters. It's interesting. You only see those characters in another system at the point of the Super Nintendo where the CDI was released. And Nintendo had a relationship with Philips and with Sony, for that matter, to build a CD-ROM attachment for the Super NES. And that deal, for a bunch of different reasons, went south. But in order to get out of their contract with Philips, Nintendo said, okay, well, here's what we'll do. We'll give you a Zelda game and we'll give you a Mario game. So there's two Zelda games on the CDI and there's one Mario game on the CDI. The Mario game's called Mario Hotel. And none of them are great, but they're the only times where you can see Mario and Zelda on systems that don't belong to Nintendo.
I was actually going to talk about ask about the Philips CDI one, because that is actually a horrible game. And it's, I think, the only time you hear Link speak, too. So it's like, oh, it's like the one time you hear him speak and it's a crap game.
Nintendo had to do something to get out of that contract with Philips, it was going to cost them a bunch of money. So here's Zelda, you can borrow them. Here's Mario, you can borrow them for one game, and you know, we'll wash our hands and walk away. But, you know, like I say, the games aren't very good, and Nintendo, you know, that's the only time that they appeared on other systems. And I mean, it kind of was even in Nintendo's favor. So here's what happens when somebody else does Zelda, or somebody else puts a Mario game out. It sucks. Well, you know, come buy our system and you can play the good ones.
So after the partnership fell through with Sony and Nintendo, I think when PlayStation 1 came out, Virtual Boy came out around the same time. You know, why did that flop, Virtual Boy?
A lot of people look at Virtual Boy because it's really Nintendo's biggest failure. And, you know, the thing about the Virtual Boy is it was a great idea, but it wasn't properly executed. You know, to look into this thing and play games in like full 3D, like the 3D effect actually works really well, but the problem is there's no color. The only thing that you see inside of there is red and black. So after about 10 minutes, you start to get dizzy. And, you know, it's funny because the Virtual Boy is what originated all these little warnings that you see in every game, mostly Nintendo, but that video games might cause seizures, blah, blah, blah. I mean, it really doesn't, but the Virtual Boy is what started that.
Oh, wow.
People were actually having seizures while playing some of these Virtual Boy games, people that might have been otherwise not prior or previously exposed to anything that might trigger an epileptic seizure. But people were having a lot of physical problems with playing Virtual Boy games because of the way that the screen worked. Like I said, it wasn't a bad idea. It was just poorly executed. And, you know, the thing about Nintendo that you kind of got to tip your hat to them is the Virtual Boy was off the market within a year. They saw it. They put it out. It didn't do well, and then they yanked it. Okay, you know, thanks. It's pretty collectible today. A lot of people look to collect the Virtual Boy, and a lot of people actually bought the Virtual Boy, but quickly realized that it really wasn't fun to play.
Not for extended gameplay use, right?
Certainly not. No, I mean, we joke that the Virtual Boy fries your brain, but it really, there's very few people that you can talk to that can play the Virtual Boy for any length of time and it doesn't bother them. It pretty much bothers everybody.
So after the Virtual Boy flopped, I always thought, like, again, another rumor, that Nintendo was on the verge of bankruptcy because of that, but Game Boy and Pokemon saved the company. Is that true?
Nintendo's never really been in trouble, so to speak. I don't think that they've ever been close to bankruptcy. Or, you know, I think that there are certain points in their history where they did certain things that just kind of put them over the top. And again, over the top is pretty different from, you know, saving them from hitting rock bottom. Like I say, the original Game Boy and the Pokemon game and the Tetris game. I think the Tetris game is one of the most the best selling handheld game of a handheld cartridge of all time. Is that original Tetris? And a lot of it has to do with the fact that the original Tetris was given away with so many Game Boys that they sold. But Nintendo has always had something going on that has kind of kept their bank account full, so to speak. So, for example, right now is actually a really interesting time in Nintendo's history, but a perfect example. So if you say that the Nintendo 64 and the GameCube and so let's say the Nintendo 64 was beaten pretty handily by the PlayStation 1. The PlayStation 1 probably, you know, beat the hell out of the Nintendo 64 as far as, you know, the market share and sales and everything else. And then the next generation was the GameCube, and the GameCube was a pretty distant third to the Xbox and the PlayStation 2. So Nintendo got their butts kicked two generations in a row. But what Nintendo had during both of those generations was their handheld. So they had the Game Boy Advance, which did phenomenal. They had they went on to the Nintendo DS, and they went on to the Nintendo DS Lite. The Nintendo DS series of game systems is by far the best-selling handheld of all time. And Nintendo DS is the second best-selling video game system of any type, handheld or home system, ever sold. So, you know, while their Nintendo GameCube and N64 might not have been doing so well, they did okay for them. The handheld games were just doing phenomenal. They were making a fortune on those. Those are where all of their money was. Even though their home consoles were doing great, the handhelds were doing great, bringing in all kinds of cash. Now, right now, when the Switch is just released, they kind of put both of their eggs into the same basket now, because their home console is also a handheld console. So it's far too early to tell. The Switch seems to be doing just fine, but they don't have any handhelds to fall back on. I think they're still doing the 3DSs, but it seems to me like there isn't going to really be a need for a handheld anymore with the Switch. So it's going to be real interesting to see, you know, how that pans out in the coming years with Nintendo.
You know, in the past with Nintendo, and I even think kind of now, they've kind of been reluctant to take on technology 100%. Like, even with the Switch, you still have to use, like, micro SD cards instead of having, like, a huge hard drive like other consoles would give. And, you know, with the N64, they have cartridges, and GameCube, it was like a little mini disc, and everybody else was on CDs. And even now, other consoles are on Blu-rays, and they're still on CDs, and even like their little mini discs. Why is it that they do that, and why not just jump into technology?
Well, I think you have to look at Nintendo in how they're kind of looking at the video game market. I think that they look at the video game market through a different set of glasses. So Nintendo has plenty of money and plenty of technology that they could compete with Microsoft and Sony head on and put out a system that does exactly what their system does. But then they become part of a three system market. So if, for example, if the GameCube was equally powerful or more powerful than the PlayStation 2 or the Xbox, they're in a three man market at that point. And that's really, really hard to compete against. It's bad enough Sony and Microsoft are duking it out, trying to see who's the top dog. Nintendo just kind of sits back and says, "You know what? We're gonna worry about our games. You know, we're gonna." In my opinion, Nintendo kind of looks at the video game market as from a different perspective, and they say, "Okay, well, we're gonna make some kick-ass Mario games, some kick-ass Zelda games. We're gonna put out a couple Kirby games. So, what does our system need to do to be able to play those games? Well, you know, Mario games are all cartoony kind of game. Does it need to have, you know, the same kind of power that the Xbox One or the Xbox or the PlayStation do? Probably not to play the Mario games. The Mario games looked awesome on the GameCube, and even though those graphics weren't the same type of graphics that they were playing on the Xbox or the PlayStation, it was great for what Nintendo was trying to do. And then what Nintendo also does is they look at it and say, okay, so we're not gonna compete head on with these guys. What can we do to make our system different, more interesting? So then you look at the Nintendo Wii. The Nintendo Wii was grossly outpowered by both the Xbox 360 and the PlayStation 3. But Nintendo, what did Nintendo have? Nintendo had all the Mario games again, and they had this cool new motion controller that was kind of interesting, kind of different, something people hadn't really seen before. I think that's Nintendo's angle. Is that, okay, well, we're not going to really compete with those guys. Let those guys put DVD players and all of this other crap, Netflix, into their system. I think there might have been Netflix on the Wii at some point, but let all that stuff's an afterthought for Nintendo. If we can do it, great. If not, we don't care. We want to put out great games. We want to put out a great system. We want to maybe introduce some new gimmicks or new innovation on our system. Take a look at the Nintendo DS, for example. The Nintendo DS, when it came out, it's got two screens. Nobody's ever done two screens before. Holy crap, well, you know, let's put two screens, and it outsold everybody else. It just, Nintendo DS was directly competing against the PSP. The PSP was far superior as far as technology and graphics. The PSP should have beat the Nintendo DS, but it didn't. The PSP was just another handheld system with one screen that could play, you know, Call of Duty. Well, Nintendo has their system, it's got two screens, it's got, you know, something new, something different, it's got all these great Mario and Pokemon games. They just pounced, they just pounded on the PSP, despite being, you know, the underdog from a technological standpoint. And I think that's the thing about Nintendo, is they don't want to compete with those guys. We'll do our own thing. We'll put out some great games. We'll be real, really careful with our marquee characters to make sure all of those guys are in really good games, and people will buy our systems. And in general, they're right.
You know, their handhelds, when it comes to Nintendo, their handhelds are some of the best on the market, and that is so true. I know with PSP, they kept going through so many that it became tedious to even wanting to go out and buy a new one. I mean, they would bring out the PSP, then PSP Go, and then they canceled PSP Go and brought out a different handheld, and then they keep bringing out another one. And I think Vita is the last one, and I'll be honest, I didn't even buy a Vita because they canceled the PSP Go so fast. I was like, I'm not putting money down on that again.
Yeah, the Vita didn't do very well at all. And that's another example. Is, so, you know, the Vita was a beautiful system. It's just really powerful. It could play great games. Why didn't it succeed? Well, the main reason is because everybody could play all of those same games, or, you know, everybody could play them on a tablet or a phone, or, you know, I mean, maybe not exactly as as good as they would be on the Vita. But what didn't the Vita have? Well, the Vita didn't have any of the Mario games. They didn't have any of the Pokemon games. They didn't have, and none of those games could be found on a phone. So why did Nintendo succeed where the Vita didn't? I mean, 3DS. But 3DS was the last handheld system that Nintendo put out. The 3DS had a hard time early on. It came out with at kind of a high price. Nintendo, I think Nintendo dropped the price by almost 40% within 6 months because the 3DS wasn't doing well. But when it finally started to get its legs, the 3DS picked up, and actually ended up doing pretty well. There's a few different versions of it now, and But, you know, Sony didn't have any of that stuff. So to compete against the thing that everybody already has in their pocket, a cell phone, you have to have something different, something interesting. And that's why, you know, Nintendo put 3D into it. I don't even know that the 3D was the succeeding factor for the 3DS. I think the fact that, you know, they started to come up with some good Mario and Zelda games and some decent software. But it's pretty tough to compete with phones and tablets. And Sony, despite putting out another really good product with the Vita, they just got their butts kicked because they didn't have what Nintendo did. They didn't have something interesting. They didn't have some new innovation, and they didn't have the Nintendo library of games.
Do you ever think that Nintendo will stop making handhelds and just put all their eggs in the basket when it comes to Switch? I know they say they're not going to do that, but, you know, it kind of seems that's where they're heading to.
Right. It does. I agree. I don't see how they can keep making a handheld. The Switch is the handheld, in my opinion. So I don't know. Do I think Nintendo's ever going to stop making consoles? No, I don't think they'll stop making consoles. But will they continue to make a handheld with the Switch? I don't know. I really don't see that happening. But if I could figure out, or if I knew all of Nintendo's moves over the years before they did, then I would own Nintendo, not them. But they seem to have, they always have something up their sleeve. You know, I don't understand. And my, like, when the Virtual Boy, going back a little bit, when the Virtual Boy came out, I remember when they came out and I thought, oh my gosh, this thing is going to be terrible. Like, nobody's going to buy that thing. And I was right. But when the DS came out, I thought the same thing. I thought, who the hell cares about having two screens? Why does that matter? I don't need two screens. One screen's enough. Yeah, I was totally wrong. Nintendo, I mean, like I said, the DS is the best-selling handheld of all time. And the only game console, even home systems that did better than the DS of the PlayStation 2. I mean, then the DS beat the Xbox 360. It beat everything. So I was completely wrong on that. So I don't know what they've got up their sleeve, but I'm sure it's something. And then the other thing about Nintendo is they have so many different things going on, and they've done so well over the years that my understanding is they have so much cash in the bank that they could survive many, many, many failed consoles, and it wouldn't matter to them. So they'll just keep innovating. They'll just keep coming up with new, you know, I say this with air quotes, new gimmick, because I don't really think that the word gimmick is necessarily a bad thing where video games are concerned, but they'll keep coming up with new ideas, new things to keep their video game consoles interesting, and we'll see what happens. I wasn't a big fan of the Switch when it first came out, but it's been growing on me. I'll tell you, it's really been growing on me. So we'll see what happens.
Well, thanks, Sean, so much for coming on. You got so much history in your head, and I love, like, piecing it out of you, man.
No problem. I'm glad to do it anytime.
Those interested in more information about Sean Kelly and the National Video Game Museum, head to their website, nvmusa.org. That's nvmusa.org.
This has been the Mason Vera Payne Show. Thanks for listening. Can't wait to hear more? Subscribe, rate, and comment at masonverapayne.com. That's masonverapayne.com. Also, follow Mason on Facebook and Twitter at Mason Vera Payne. That's all one word. And don't forget to share the show with your friends.